Revelation 20, 21 are beautiful descriptions of what's next for us. Our text is Revelation 21, verses 1 through 6. Let me just read. We read all of that in our responsive reading. Let me read verse 1 I want to talk about. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the former heaven and the former earth had passed away and vanished, and there was no longer any sea. Interesting that he said there's no longer any sea. You think, why would that be important? Because we love the sea. But the sea separates us and protects us. There will be no need for protection or separation then, and we're all together, I guess, is what that means. Another passage I want to read. I'm hesitant to read a lot of scripture because sometimes it just puts people to sleep. But in Colossians 3, 1 through 4, a very important passage. If you would then be raised up with Christ to a new life, thus sharing his resurrection from the dead, aim at and seek the rich eternal treasures that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds, affections, keep them on things which are above, things higher than the earth, and on things that are not on the earth. For as far as this world is concerned, you have died, and your new, real life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also know we will appear with him in the splendor of his glory, from the Amplified. So we're really new age. I thought about entitling it that. Christians in the new age. We talk about new age like they're out here in Sedona, Arizona, somewhere humming harmonic sounds, going, but we're the new age people. We have already joined that new age. We're part of a resurrection group that's already there. We're dead in Christ and resurrected to a new life. I guess what I wanted for you today is for you to live totally aware of your citizenship in heaven. Politics. I've never seen the world like it is today, and I've never worried about our options and voting like I guess I will at this election. Our country needs prayer is all I can say there. But we're not citizens here. They still let us vote because we haven't renounced our U.S. citizenship. But in a way, as Christians, we should. We should say we're not a part of this world. We're part of what is to come. We've been told, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so let's talk about what's in store in the age of the resurrection. What's coming should make us even more risk-taking, sacrificial in our love. I was thinking about how to illustrate that to you. We know what our future is, and so we can risk loving people. We can risk doing things here for God. It's why missionaries go overseas, and we've had some folks in here this week from China, India, Venezuela, and when they talk about the problems that they have there, you almost want to say, why in the world did you go? Folks here this week, they've been in China 16 years. And they described their struggles there to not be caught, arrested, not be thrown out of the country at best and imprisoned at worst. But they're willing to make sacrifices because they've got a safety net, if you will. If you have a life jacket and somebody falls overboard, you're far more likely to jump in after them with your life jacket on than if you don't have a life jacket. And I guess that safety of knowing who we are, we can risk things. In fact, Paul said in Colossians 1, 4 through 5, we have heard of the love you have for all the saints because of the hope you have laid up in heaven. You love people because of the hope you have. You say, how does that fit? Well, you can take a risk. You don't have to worry about how things are going to turn out. And missionaries especially are taking colossal risk because they know what their future is in the resurrection age. So you can love without fear of rejection. Perfect love casts out fear. We're told so missionaries go to rescue the perishing because they're citizens of a new kingdom and they know this is not home. If we live just for this life, we try to make this everything and then it's nothing. If you seek to save your life, you'll lose it. If you lose your life for my sake, you'll find it. And I find Christians willing to take risk in how they live, what they do, how they love, I think because of our hope of a new world coming. The real focus here, it's said twice in our text from Revelation 21, 1 through 6, God makes all things new. He who sits on the throne, he's in charge. It's his kingdom. And he said, I'm going to make all things new. These words are trustworthy and you can count on them. If the king gives us the assurance, then I think we can count on what's going to happen. Let's talk about the new place and what it'll be like. As much as anything, I'm excited about living in a world where there's no sin. Not just them, me. Paul says that in Romans 6 and 7. He said, oh wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of sin and death? We use here banana pudding as our type of, our archetype of sin, because I like it and I can eat too much of it. But I hate it when I do. I wish there was no sin in me. I wish there was no temptation to sin. I wish I didn't have any evil in me. And when I find evil tendencies in me, let's just stay with banana pudding, then I wish it wasn't that way. In the world to come, there will be no sin. There won't be ISIS cutting the heads off of Christians and asking children if they're Christian and then killing them if they are. He's made everything new. What a mess sin makes of things. It messes up people's lives. I'm doing a little counseling with some folks for the first time in a while. And, you know, he said this week, I messed up. And I wanted to slap him and say, you really did. You messed up. Because sin just destroys the things that it infects. When Paul talks about that in Romans, he said, there's a civil war going on inside me. I don't want to do evil, and I do it. I want to do good, and I don't. I long to live in holiness, where I'm pure, where my motives are always pure, my words are always perfect, where there's no temptation and no sin in me or anywhere else. Sin in the world, I don't know how you are about watching television, but I'm getting to where the dark stories on television, I don't even enjoy watching. This Law and Order Special Victims Unit, especially heinous crimes, they say in their opening. It just depresses me. I know it's there, but I find myself less and less willing to focus on the evil that's in the world. I just a couple of times lately have turned off the news because it was all bad. It's a car bomb in Iraq. It's killings in Syria. It's killings in the U.S. It's how many people died in Chicago. It's servicemen who commit suicide. 22 a day of our American servicemen are committing suicide. 50,000 homeless. It's just sin is such a bad thing and takes over. And yet the king has given us assurance that everything is going to be new. No sin. No fear, no anxiety there. One of the nice pictures we got from our reading is that we're going to be the bride of Christ. I do a lot of weddings. In my lifetime, I have only seen one really ugly bride. Now, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? I remember almost gasping. I had not seen her. I wasn't at the rehearsal. It was a big wedding. It was in another place, and it was 50 years ago. It was 56 years ago. And so I hadn't seen, it was my friend. I was a groomsman in his wedding, and I wasn't there for the rehearsal. They told me where to stand. And when she started down the aisle, I wanted to shake him and say, "My God, what are you thinking?" I didn't, and I guess they've had a good life. But makeup and hair didn't help her. That has nothing to do with the sermon. Except this. We're going to be adorned like a bride. I saw a woman this week that I think the last time I had seen her was at her wedding. And she had no makeup on. And when Jean and I left, we said, "She's looked better than that at other times." There was quite a change. Well, a bride adorned for her husband is a good picture of what we will be cleaned up at our best. They've got us looking as good as we can look. Revelation 21, 11 says, God will give us his glory. Clothed in glory, just shining. No pain, no death. A new body. I've been threatening to, I do funny things on Facebook sometimes, and I've been threatening to Photoshop my body. Just really a great body from some Olympic swimmer. And put me in a Speedo with my head on it and say, "The pool is open." Thus far, Gene is rejecting that idea, but I think it would draw attention to the fact that we have a new pool here at Whitestone and it's open, and that's probably not going to happen, is it? Plato said we'd be a disembodied spirit. I don't believe that. I don't think we're ever nothing. As he sort of imagined it, a spirit with no body. But we're going to get a new body. It's going to be perfect. Those stories that come back from heaven when people die and they've been there for a while, those stories are all of people that have good bodies. Philippians 3, 20 and 21 says he'll change our body to be like his glorious body. I've got a sister who had a cerebral hemorrhage when she was 2. This hand is drawn up. This leg is shorter. She walks with a bad limp. She just has the one hand she can use and has had a difficult time getting through life yet. In fact, she only has 50% brain capacity. She has a master's degree. She adopted 2 handicapped girls and raised them. She taught school for 27 years at Tennessee School for the Deaf. And if she'd had 100% use of her brain, she would have been something else. That's her doctor even said, "Wonder what you would have been if you had all of this fixed." But at 2, her brain synapses found new ways around. But she falls occasionally. She doesn't have good peripheral vision. She had an annual wreck, and we finally made her quit driving several years ago. But Margie's never had a good body. You know, just hadn't been a good body. That's going to be changed. She can run like a deer and leap and climb mountains in that New Jerusalem. One Sonny, who comes out here occasionally and speaks, his son, in an accident, wind up with some severe physical problems. They'll all be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. I look forward to a new body. I'm a week into being 75 years old. And I was thinking the other day, I don't remember being pain-free. None of you are old enough to relate to that, I'm sure. But things ache and hurt. And you look across the room and think, I wish somebody else would get that for me so I wouldn't have to get up, you know? We're just not as active as we used to be. And we have aches and pains. The first thing I was ever afraid of in life was polio. I was pre-Salk vaccine, and I had a friend who had polio, and we visualized him in an iron lung, and it never did get to that point. But I remember being afraid of polio. The second thing I remember being afraid of is arthritis, because the old folks around our farm would talk about, my arthritis is really acting up. It's going to rain, I think. I got arthritis, my knees swell. And I remember trying to figure out what causes that. And the answer was, well, everybody gets it. It's just old age. So you're going to have arthritis. And I thought, I may miss polio, but arthritis, I guess I'm going to have someday. And certainly do. We're going to get a new body, and it's not going to have any problems ever again. A glorious body, fit for the age to come. A whole new creation there. It's not so much that we go to heaven, as heaven comes down. If you read this, the New Jerusalem comes down to earth in a beautiful urban city setting. We get a new relationship with God. He's with us. I know he's with us now. He said, I'll never leave you comfortless. I'll never forsake you. But to see his face, that was a part of what we read. To get to really see the Lord will be something else, won't it? I don't know how to describe the difference, maybe. Paul talked about it in 2 Corinthians 5 when he said, when I'm present in the body, I'm absent from the Lord. And when I'm absent from the body, I'm away from the body, I'll be with the Lord. And he said, for me, I'd rather be there, but for your sake, I'll stay here. So in this new body, in this new environment, we'll see God. Because we're pure in heart, blessed, the Beatitudes say, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Shall see his face. His name will be on our forehead. I can't imagine that. What it would be like to look at the Lord and really see him pure, holy, pain-free, in a glorified new body with a new creation and no evil. It intrigues us when Jesus says to the thief on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise. And to say that to a man who's not sold out his life to the Lord all of his life, but believes at the last minute. So these passages lead us to a place filled with the glory of God, with a body that's glorified, that it's changed, clothed with light, and a heaven that's come down to us, came down out of heaven to earth, and a future which nobody can ever separate us again from the love of God, and filled with pleasure and peace and joy and no sin and no fear. I think Charles Williams says better than anybody else what heaven will be like when he says, it's the end of desire. You won't ever want anything again. Now that's an amazing thought. If you want to contemplate something this afternoon, that's a thought to think about. We always want something we don't have. Well, I wish there was, and it can be a little something, but even when things are perfect, you know, at Christmas everything's wonderful and the family's there, it'd be nice if it snowed once everybody gets to the point. Just, if I said, is there anything else that you want? There is always something. And that age to come in the resurrection, in this picture we have, a future where there's nothing that's missing. You won't want anything that you don't have. A new world in the sense of the absence of what's not there, death and hell, Satan, sin, impurity, longing, pain, and a new world in the sense of what is there. At his right hand are pleasures forevermore, joy and peace, no separation, no unrest, there's not even a sea. I was thinking about what all will not be there. No cemeteries, no hospitals, no police. It'll be a wonderful, wonderful time. We've been in the bodies a long time, and this feels like home, doesn't it? And yet we're not home. This is an earth suit that we're wearing because we're out of our natural environment. If you were in space, you need a space suit or you'd blow up. If you're underwater, you need a diving suit or you'd be compressed. But we're out of our natural environment on earth, and we need an earth suit, a tent, an earthly tent is what Paul calls it. When we put this off, we have joy unspeakable. It's full of glory there. Paul, writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 3:15, talks about treasures over there. Lay your treasures up over there, where, not where you have things here. This is the elevator ride to the penthouse. This is not it. You're not there. But we're going to a place where we're there forever. And as a bride adorned for her husband, he makes us ready. We'll dwell with him. He'll be our God. He'll be with us in a spectacular place. Says he's gone to prepare it for us. I can't imagine the preparation that goes into where we're going. But I wish we could set our affection on things above rather than things of the earth. Things here seem so important to us. I have friends that when the University of Tennessee loses a football game, it depresses them. I was listening to a lady talk about she had to use some different toothpaste while she was here, and she was just really upset. You know, and I got missionaries sitting over here who don't have air conditioning and clean water. And I wanted to say to her, why don't you go over and talk to them? They'll tell you about things to be upset about. And that's probably not the right way to approach that. But the things that bother us here will pale, the song we sing, will dim and lose their value. And things we treasured here when remembered up there will only bring a smile. I understand complaints. And I understand saying, you know, these cookies were cooked too long. I understand all that. Don't be paranoid around me and think, I can't say, it's just too hot, isn't it? Or I'll say something like, well, not as hot as hell. But, you know, we could have a sauna ministry, I guess. I just want us to think about heaven more than we do. And lift our sights to our home where we're with Jesus forever, around his throne, in a place of paradise with our friends where there's no possibility of separation. That's our future, and I'm looking forward to it. The key to that future is represented in the elements of communion today, that he's prepared a way for us to get there. He's reconciled us to God through his death on Calvary's cross, and Jesus is our hope. We celebrate his shed blood, his broken body, with communion. I'd like for you to take just a few minutes to silently pray, prepare your hearts for that by thanking him that he's preparing a place for us where we fit, where it's perfect, where it's the end of desire. Let's pray.